This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Live from the Podcast Zone at the NINA 2013 Conference and Expo in the Charlotte Convention Center, it's Within the Trenches with your host, Ricardo Martinez.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and this is going to be episode number 35 of Within the Trenches. And this episode is going to be sponsored by Intrado and Avaya, the APN podcast network. And today I'm speaking with Jennifer, and she is with Loudoun County E911. She's the director as well as the president of the Tennessee chapter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing good. Have you been here the whole week?
I actually came in late, so I didn't get here till Tuesday morning.
No, okay.
Yes.
Have you been attending any of the sessions or anything like that?
Yes, been to several sessions. Lots of good information. So I've enjoyed those so far.
Would have been any sessions that you've taken that have stood out really to you? We
went into the funding model. I went to that one because in our state we're looking at some funding issues right now and how to correct those. So suggestions for funding legislation was very important to me. And then today I set into the Sandy Hook lessons learned.
Session. How was that?
It was awesome. Brought a lot of perspective about from a small center, how they handled some things that you probably wouldn't think about unless you've been in that situation.
Right.
And unfortunately, they had that tragedy, but fortunately, the rest of us can learn
right.
how to better ourselves and be prepared in the future.
Right. Yeah, you know, that was actually one of the ones that I wanted to attend. I thought that was later on today, so man, I missed it.
It was very good.
So how did you get started in 911? Like I had been telling you earlier before the podcast, this is all about the experience of being a 911 dispatcher, and you had said that at one time you were one of those behind the mic. So how did you get started in this?
I originally started out as a part-time dispatcher while I was going to paramedic school.
Oh, okay.
So my background is in the field on an EMS side, and then I've always worked in the 911 center as well, just kind of bringing that component all together. And then my career changed, and I went full-time into 911, where I've been since then. So I've worked my way up since from a part-time dispatcher to the director of the center that I'm at. So I've kind of been fortunate enough to work in all aspects and participate ground level up.
So do you remember what it was like when you first got started? Like when you, did you sit along with anyone before you started, or was it just go right in for training?
No, I did sit and observe a little bit to see what it was like. I like that it's something different every day. You
right.
don't get into the mundane things of doing the same thing over and over again. Of course, you know, the every answer is help people, and
right.
the rest of us think, oh, okay, you know, but it's kind of being able to put everything together to multitask and have the ability to coordinate the responses that I enjoy
right.
And what drew me into doing that.
So were you able to listen to phone calls right off the bat? Because you said you sat with somebody. So
yes.
were you able to listen to the phone calls at the same time too?
Yes.
And what did you think when you first started hearing? I mean, I'm sure you probably took calls that you listened to where people were screaming.
Yes.
You know, what was your thought?
It's very overwhelming at first when you first get in there and you realize that you are the only link between that person and what they need in their
right.
time of emergency. So that's very overwhelming, and you have to be respectful of that. But it's also very rewarding to know that you are the person that they reach out to when they need something. So I think that's you have to look at it in that regard, that if you don't handle the situation, then who is going to handle that situation?
Exactly. You know, there's and a lot of this show is also you know, targeted towards public education too, because I say it all the time and I'll continue to say it, you know, the general public really doesn't know what we do. So, you know, just hearing you talk about, you know, how overwhelming it can be, because I know some people that I've talked to just think that, you know, we take the call and just take a little bit of information and give it out to the officer or you know, the fire department or paramedics or what have you and get them out there. But that's not the whole part, you know, that's just the first part of it. There's so much more to it. You know, we're emotionally involved. And it's stressful, and yeah, it can be intense. So, do you remember any calls that stick out in mind for you?
The The most calls that stick out for me, or the most one that sticks out for me, mm-hmm. is in 2004, we had an officer-involved shooting.
Okay.
And we lost the officer. So that one for me is one that will ring out to where you never will get over that. You never mm-hmm. will forget that. That to a lot of dispatchers that have to deal with public safety officers, or, you know, it's one of our own, and we reach out for them in officer safety, right. and that's kind of your worst nightmare, your worst day.
Exactly.
So that one will always be there, you know, as far as being able to think back to the events of that day and how it was handled. So for me, that was probably the worst one. I've had several that I feel like are the best calls, you know, mm-hmm. are the ones where you get to actually follow through, I guess, and somebody actually comes in. And we don't do this job to be thanked, but it's
right.
very
yeah.
helpful when you do see somebody where they say, if it weren't for you, we wouldn't have been able to get what we needed. And so then it reminds you what you're there for, and reminds you why it's so rewarding, and you're proud of your profession, is because those people come back and say, you know, thanks for being there when my grandfather had a stroke, because
right.
if you hadn't sent the help to him, he wouldn't be here. You know, so those things are the good calls that,
exactly.
that stick out.
Now, did you have a chance to experience that then? Did people come back to you and thank you for that personally? Were you able to get that closure? Because I know, and I tell people all the time, something that they don't understand too is that we don't get that closure.
Right.
You know, we go from call to call to call. So did you happen to be?
We've had a few in our community mm-hmm. where people have come in and thanked us for being, you know, being there and being the one that's behind the phone call when they call in. But not very often. Like you said, there's not a lot of closure. It's very hard
right.
being on from an EMS background. There's mm-hmm. a big difference for me when I'm out on in an EMS world. You're physically doing something at that moment for that patient, for that person that needs help. When you're in the 911 center and you're behind a console, sometimes it feels like you're not able to physically do something. So
yeah.
you almost feel helpless.
Yeah, of course.
But you have to put it in perspective, and mm-hmm. you have to realize that your job is the link mm-hmm. and understand that. But it's hard for us sometimes because people don't think, you know, that the ambulance service gets the patient report at the end of the day, or the fire department gets the call that says, we appreciate you doing this, that, the other. And it's kind of an overlooked part. So mm-hmm. doesn't happen very often, but I have had a couple. We had a child that had fell in a pond, and we were able to help the mom talk her into, you know, getting him out and actually starting CPR on him, and he actually survived.
Oh,
so
wow.
she
That's
came
great.
Back in and talked to all of us that handled that call and brought the child in. And so those
That's
things
amazing.
are amazing and,
yeah.
and really makes you feel good that you know you're doing mm-hmm. something beneficial for your community.
That's great. Now, in your opinion, like you just said, sometimes we're kind of, you know, pushed aside. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it is that, like I said, in your opinion, why do you think it is that 911 dispatch is that we're just kind of put off to the side sometimes?
I think that in our communities, people don't understand what we do. Mm-hmm. So they don't realize that we're there. You know, it's kind of, you don't think about emergency services until you need them.
Right.
And so then when you need something and your ambulance shows up, or your fire truck, or your police officer shows up, that's the person you're associated with that's helping you on your emergency. Mm-hmm. You're not even remembering who you talked to on the phone.
Right.
So they're kind of out of sight and out of mind.
Yeah.
And I think that nobody intentionally overlooks them. The other part, I think, is that we're so good at our jobs that people just expect it from us. And so therefore we don't
there
get a
go.
Pat on the back
yeah.
when something goes good.
That's very
you know,
true.
A lot of people say we only get recognition when something goes wrong. And I think that's because we're so efficient at what we do.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. But no, I do agree though that, yeah, just that we get pushed off to the side, and it could be very much like you said, because of the fact that we're so good at our job and is expected. But you know, there are some times where I've taken phone calls where they call 911 and I answer 911 and they say, well, I don't need 911. Oh, you don't have an emergency? No, I do have an emergency, but I'm calling for the police, not 911. Oh, okay. What's your emergency? Because
yes.
I'm your link. Like you were saying, we're the link. I'm the person who's going to get you that police officer or the fire department or EMS. Oh, well, I didn't know that. So, yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions. In your career, have you found a lot of those misconceptions to be the same as well? I mean, we all have similarities, but what kind of misconceptions have you seen in the 911 community, I guess?
In a small community, mm-hmm. We get a lot of people when we ask questions. You know, if we do EMD or we're asking a lot of questions of the person, they have the misconception that we are the person coming to them.
And so yeah, they that's get true,
a little,
yeah.
They get a little frustrated, mm-hmm. you know, stop asking me questions and just get here. And, you know, so we have to explain we're not the one physically coming, but we're handling that for you.
Right.
We're sending you the response. So I think that that's a misconception. I think that the other thing is the misconception of how busy are we? You know, I think that the outside agencies sometimes think, oh, just they can handle it. They're not doing anything. They're
right.
watching TV. They're, mm-hmm. you know, doing whatever. And I don't think anybody grasps on a regular basis what the 911 centers do
right.
on an average call and on a daily basis. And just because your radio channel may not be going on and it may be quiet on your radio channel doesn't mean we're not doing three other things mm-hmm. at the same time. So I
right.
think those are the misconceptions about how busy we are and
yeah.
what really are our responsibilities.
Now, being in the position that you are in your center, do you still work the line at all at any time? Do you still try to get in there? Or?
I do try to make an mm-hmm. effort to get in there. I still keep all my certifications and I still can dispatch.
Great.
Mainly, I will do that if there's an emergency that comes up, you know, with an employee, sickness, mm-hmm. illness, somebody has to leave, or big events, mm-hmm. you know, big weather events or
right.
something major going on. I kind of operate on, I don't ask them to do anything that I'm not willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that they respect me more because I am able to do the job that I'm asking
right.
them to do.
Yeah,
so I think
exactly.
it's important for me
That's
to
good.
Be able to do that.
Now, being, when you were on the line full time, were there any calls that you like taking more than others? I know, and it sounds weird to say, and especially for the public to hear it, but for me personally, it's domestic calls. I don't know what it is, but those calls are the ones that I would rather take over, you know, like a robbery or something. I think it's because I get to help out maybe just a little bit more. So those are the calls that I really like taking. So is there any specific call that you like taking more than another?
No, I can't think of a call type that's mm-hmm. sticking out in my head right now, but sometimes the non-emergency, just normal stuff that maybe didn't even need to come in to us on 911, mm-hmm. but where it's not something that's going on in progress or it's not something that's urgent, emergent, mm-hmm. and I can take that extra time to help out that person
right.
a little more, give them a little more advice on resources,
yeah.
you know, what where they can call or, you know, try to reach out to them on a personal level a little mm-hmm. bit more than just getting pertinent information and getting somebody to them. I can spend a little more time on the phone with them and make them feel like that somebody is there listening to them and somebody's there to help them.
Right. What about calls from kids?
Calls from kids are always hard. Everybody
yeah.
thinks that is always difficult. I like dealing with kids. Obviously, I hate that when they're in an emergency situation.
Yeah,
it makes it heightened. It makes it different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this may be the wrong perspective, but I kind of look at it as we as adults most of the time choose our circumstances to put us in events that require us to need emergency services. Children don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
People put them in those situations or they do it because of they're not educated enough to keep themselves out yet mm-hmm. or experience. So I feel like they didn't put themselves there. So therefore, it feels better to be able to help them out of a situation that's beyond their control. Sometimes with adults, we look at it and say, you know what, sometimes you get what you deserve and we'll help
right.
you the best way we can, but maybe you shouldn't
yeah.
have made that decision. So,
yeah, it's like that'll learn you type thing.
Exactly.
But, yeah,
you know,
we're
with
there
kids,
to help.
It's a little bit different. So, uh-huh. and then, of course, social backgrounds and family situations mm-hmm. are pretty difficult when you realize what kind of environment some of them are living in. That's the
right.
hard part for me, I think, is, you know, when you hear a child call in and tell you about a circumstance that most adults don't have to endure or see.
Right.
And a child is living in it. I think that's the difficult part for me.
Yeah. You know, kid calls too, you know, I like taking those as well. But like you, you know, I'm in the same boat. It is difficult when they're in a rough spot. But lately there's been, when I've been working, there's been kids playing on cell phones and we try to tell them on the phone, you know, because I can hear them, you know, saying a bunch of stuff and playing. And I tell them, you know, it's possible that we can find you, you know, can I talk to your mom or dad? And then, you know, they continue playing. Now, I've told the story before, but there was a time where a child called on 911 He was playing on the phone and he was saying, "You can't find me." Well, we found his address and we sent an officer out there. And I believe I mentioned this too in a previous episode, but the officer got out there and he says on the radio, "Central, I'm pretty sure I'm out at the right house because I just saw a kid at the window and he ran."
Oh, yes. We've had those too. And anytime I have a chance to speak to our community, I tell people, if you give cell phones to a child, make sure the batteries are out.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Even if it doesn't have service, you can still call. And people do not know that. I mean, they think if I don't have service to that phone, it doesn't work. Well, it does. And, you know, we do that too. And we will send an officer if we can locate them. You know, we will do that. And we had one case where it was about a 7-year-old child that called us about 35 times in a very short time frame. So we located that child, and the next week, the mom marched him up to the 911 center with a handwritten note for us, the police officer, everybody, about how he was sorry he had tied up our resources. So it was pretty interesting.
That's cool that, you know, the mom did that, because, you know, then the child will learn from that as well. So that is awesome. We've gotten a few letters. I'll go into work and there's letters like that, handwritten in like crayon or something, and they're on the board.
Yes.
Like, what is this? And then I'll read it and I'll start chuckling. I'm like, well, you know, thank you to the parent for doing that. That's really good. There's been a lot of things going on here at the conference, and it's a lot of like the next gen stuff. And I've asked other people, but I would like to get your opinion as well. What do you think about the text to 911? Because seeing how we're supposed to be going through it in 2014 already, I can't remember the exact date, but that's going to be coming up. So
I have some mixed emotions about that. Yeah. I think that we have to stay on top of technology, and be able to accept text. My biggest excitement for that is for the deaf and hearing impaired community, because we are so far behind their technology now that it really scares me as a person responsible for providing 911 to that community that we have failed them in keeping up with their technology, because they text, they don't use the TTY anymore that we've all been accustomed to. So I'm very thankful that we're going to be able to get to that level with them. I think that we're going to have to do a lot of public education that texting is not the preferred method to reach 911.
Yeah, because everybody texts for everything now.
Yes. And in cases where you cannot speak, you know, those situations where you're hiding in a closet and someone's in your house, something like that, absolutely wonderful.
Right.
And it's going to be a great tool to have. I'm a little concerned that it's going to populate our 911 system.
Yeah.
Because
that could very well happen.
You know, people that now may not get involved if they see something suspicious may get involved with a text. They may think they have a little more ability to remain anonymous. So false calls, you know, things like that. I'm a little worried about how much workload it's going to add to us, and how are we going to prioritize them, and how are we going to locate the text, and, you know, a lot of unknowns in that. So I have some mixed feelings about it as far as that goes.
Oh, I'm definitely there with you. And on that note, actually, that's going to be the wrap-up of this episode. So thank you very much for joining me on this episode. I really do appreciate it. And for everybody who's listening, this episode and everything else is going to be on thejabberlog.com. But if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything, you can email the show, which is thejcast@thejabberlog.com. You can find us on Twitter at WTT Podcast, and you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WithinTheTrenches Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.